right, welcome back to another episode. Can you believe it? Another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Multiverse. And it's a podcast that's hosted by myself, Kyle Sconewell, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. I want to start today with a huge announcement, a Friends from Work announcement. That announcement is we officially have a new merchandise shirt. The crowd is supposed to go wild. It didn't work. There we go. There we go.
A brand new merchandise. Brand new.
You know why he says that, right? It's about to be all things Spider-Man up in here. And with that, we have
all
a new
things
Friends
Spider-Man
from work.
Up in here could be the title of my autobiography.
That's true. The Robbie Earle story. We have a new shirt. It's really exciting. We're offering two styles of it. We're calling it a modern or a vintage version of the t-shirt. It's basically like a cream Spider-Man inspired shirt or an all white Spider-Man inspired shirt. And the all white version is a tri-blend shirt. So if you go that route, it's the new technology of a very, very soft feeling shirt. I'm announcing it now because we're just over 6 weeks away from Spider-Man Brand New Day, and we want to make sure that we have these shirts in your hands by the time you're going to the theater. So this is very exciting for us. We're going to do pre-orders. If you go to our website, theffwpodcast.com/shop, or just go to theffwpodcast.com and navigate to the shop, you can see the shirts there. Choose your size, choose your style, and if you're a Friends from Work Plus subscriber, I'm going to make sure that every Friends from Work Plus subscriber has a 50% off code. So just to kind of help us cover the cost of the shirt and the shipping. I'm excited about this. Order all of them. This is going to be a pre-order for a second so that we can kind of get a gauge on how many that we should print. So once you place your order, give us a few weeks to get them printed and shipped to you, but we promise we'll have them in your hands before the movie, well before the movie is the hope. So there you go. That's my announcement for today. A new Friends from Work Spider-Man inspired t-shirt.
It's, you get either the kind of stark white that modern comics are printed on, or you get the nice kind of warm off-whitish cream that vintage comics are printed on. You could also think of it as like, do you want the Stark suit, or do you want to go for just the old red and blues, thread and needle?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or both.
Or all of them. Yeah. Order all of them. Order 10. Give them to all your friends and family. Thank you. It's fun for us to do, and it really supports this podcast. And so we appreciate you, and we appreciate all the Friends from Work Plus subscribers, patrons out there that are supporting this podcast financially. It keeps Robbie and I going. And so thank you for considering that. Thank you for doing that all these years. It means a lot to us. We are so thankful to be here. Robbie, how are you, man? We've had a couple weeks off the main feed. I know we've done a few bonus feed things here or there. Lots of movies this summer. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. It's been crazy because we are leaving for a longish trip today to go to Scotland for a little bit, which we're excited about. Yeah.
Wow.
It's been kind of on the list for a while, and for whatever reason, every time we've been over there, it's just never really worked out. But we were able to kind of set aside a bit of time here. The funny thing about vacation is I feel like you don't actually decrease the amount of work, you just kind of move it around.
Well, for you, yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
for lawyers.
Yeah, yeah, for now. But I think we're going to be able to...
You can take your phone calls from Scotland, which is great.
Yeah, no, exactly. I have tried to block most of the time off, which I'm excited about. I've got like a few things I may have to plug in on, but for the most part, I've been trying to prep for it.
I hear the nature and the cliffs they have there are really great spots for sending emails.
So yeah, no, exactly.
That's where you get it worked out.
I'm just going to send a lot of like my office for the day photos because everyone loves those. But I think I am going to We're going to be in Edinburgh for the most part, and then we're going to visit some friends in England for the tail end. But we are spending, because it's only, it's like a 40-minute train to Glasgow. So I do think while we're over there, I'm going to go check out the kind of city center area that they transformed into Manhattan for the Spider-Man movie.
Oh, see, it's all a part of the preparation.
Yeah, you know, that's, it's
we got to get like, on location. We got it. We get boots to the ground. We're out there. Just
and you know what? Like while we're there, I'm gonna cross my or check my Infinity War box. We've got like a solid 90 seconds in Scotland in Infinity War. So we're getting there.
Isn't Infinity War part of the is Infinity War part of the re-release later in September, or is it just Endgame?
That would have been, I think it's just Endgame.
That would be even more timely. They just showed Infinity War at South by Southwest London. That's what I'm thinking of, I think.
Oh, that's fun.
Well, that's really fun. Good for you. Yeah, I hope you can find some restful times out there. You can join our listener and good friend Neil, who's over there somewhere out in Europe right now. Traveling.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. This is, so today we're going to be talking about a little bit of a quick preview of X-Men 97, season 2. I just realized the social media embargo is not until the timeline's all wonky in this, right? Cause we're recording this on Tuesday, June 9. I was going to put this out right away, but we can't be talking about X-Men 97 until Saturday, I think. So if you're listening to this episode now, I think you're a week later than me. I say that just because, Rob, I wanted to briefly, before we get into the X-Men 97 stuff, touch on just a few summer. I mean, this year has been crazy for film and TV for me. I'm watching more than I've ever watched. How far are you on Spider-Noir?
I'm glad that you brought that one up because I made a decent amount of headway while I was packing this weekend. I think I'm almost through episode 6.
Okay.
So
of the 8.
And yeah, I, you know, like a lot of folks, I guess, or maybe not, I was just assuming that this show is going to be absolutely terrible. Just because, you know, Sony doesn't have a great track record for doing Spider-Man stuff. I mean, now granted, you know, Lord and Miller are involved, and obviously the Spider-Verse stuff has been one of the best pieces of the Spider-Man franchise ever. So I note that, but at the same time, you know, like that doesn't always mean that much. Like their names were going to be attached to it just because it sort of spun out of Spider-Verse. So I was expecting something that would be closer on the spectrum to like Morbius and Madame Web than to the Spider-Verse stuff in terms of quality.
Isn't it interesting in general how big the Spider-Man quote-unquote universe is? I mean, maybe not to you because you've read comics for so long, but for someone who's kind of walking into it, it's such a unique thing to explain. Like if you were trying to explain it to Violet, to say, even just on the film side of things, we've had 3 different iterations of Spider-Man in my lifetime on the film thing. But there's an animated series. Exactly. There's animated series. Now there's a Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. But what would you explain this? The Spider-Man multiverse now, where my point is this is strange, man, to do a noir thing with Nick Cage as some version of a Spider-Man character to some degree.
I mean, I think that's the other thing is I think I just assumed, you know, this is also kind of spinning out of the multiverse thing. And granted, it's not, you know, they kind of name check it at the very beginning. It's otherwise not at all multiversal, at least that I've seen. But I still kind of thought, okay, you know, people have now seen a lot of different projects that are dealing with alternate versions of existing characters, whether that's the Marvel stuff or like the Flash, where they're doing, we've seen that done a good bit. And so I wondered if by the time we finally got here, because I feel like the show was announced forever ago.
Sure, that it would be a little bit almost dated at this point, or people had moved on.
Yeah, and just kind of like one of those things where, are people really asking for this? And I don't think people were asking for it.
No.
But
it's been good, though.
It's good.
We're kind of talking around it, but it's been, you know, this podcast has to stay true to our form, which is that we always praise the big swings.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I'm not going to, I got to give them props for trying something massively different and mostly killing it. And Nick Cage, of all people, really diving into it.
There are a couple things I really like about it. And one, you know, I've been watching it in the black and white haven't watched any. I've watched the trailer in color just to kind of get a feel for it. But everything I've seen in color, I think that it looks good in color, the bits that I've seen, but I feel like it kind of loses the, like, I think part of what I like so much about the show is a lot of the CGI stuff may or may not be great, but I think when it's in the black and white, the stuff that would trigger my, like, I don't know, like whether it's an Uncanny Valley thing or just like a believability thing, doesn't go off. So like even the opening portions of him swinging through the city in the black and white, I thought looked really great. I don't know how that translates on the color side, but it was like, so I've been pleasantly surprised with how good the action stuff looks.
Yeah.
The other thing that I don't think I was prepared for, especially in a series like this, where they're doing the kind of hard boiled, like the noir thing, is I kind of like how much they're leaning into him being a jerk. But yeah, I guess he mocks people kind of constantly. Mm-hmm. And I was telling Candace, because she's been watching with me, that is something that I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but both in the movies and in the comics, like Spider-Man has really evolved from that, where like in the early days, he really was like kind of a borderline jerk. We talked about that in the Joe Kelly interview when he came on. Like he was constantly, like everything was a joke. He was making fun of people in his personal life as Spider-Man. It was kind of like a compensation thing, but also like he couldn't ever, like no one could ever get him to be like sincere. You know, he would have these kind of like standoffs with the Avengers or the Fantastic Four, where they're like trying to be serious. And now, because of how Spider-Man has progressed, the focus is way less on that and way more on him being the best of us. You know, he's like the best possible person.
Sure.
And I like that too. So I'm not saying that that's bad, but I like how much they're kind of leaning into that here. Like everything is a quip. He's constantly like undercutting moments that could be sincere until a certain point in the show when he does get sincere, and then it kind of backfires. So I don't know. I like the character development for this version of Peter Parker, Ben Reilly.
Well, that's the fun of the multiverse, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to make all these different versions from different universes, then go ahead and lean into different stuff. It doesn't have to be the same thing each time, which we've talked about this for years now. That's the positive side of all the multiverse stuff, is you get to do these things while not messing up your care for, like, I don't think this show threatens your love for Tom Holland's Spider-Man movie coming out.
Right.
Right. I don't think it messes that up, or for Spider-Verse or whatever. I thought it was really unique and really well done. It's not my favorite thing, like preference wise. Sure. There's a few things off from it that if I was critiquing it, I would say I don't think it's perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I did have fun with it. My wife really liked it, and it's been, you got to give them props for trying something big. And I like that it's new and fresh, like you're saying. So I'm not going to get any spoilers, but I've liked it.
I really like Brendan Gleeson as an actor, and I think he's a great villain. Silverman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where it's like, I kind of appreciate, I mean, he's doing a Kingpin thing, but Silverman is a, it's a great pick for that. He's kind of a classic mob boss character in the Spider-Man, like, Romita era. So it works. And he's just, you know, I think that's the other thing for me with the show. He and Nick Cage are both kind of at a level where they're in different ways. I would say Brendan Gleeson is kind of an actor's actor, where he shows up and does great work, whether he's doing Mad-Eye Moody and Harry Potter or whether he's doing like Banshees of Inisherin. And Nick Cage is something unquantifiable.
Yeah.
But both of them are just fun to watch.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I don't know what to say about Nick Cage. Is he good? I love Nick Cage, but I don't know if he's any good.
I think he is. I think he just has no interest in doing anything other than what seems the most fun to him in the moment.
Yeah. I can't believe how much he mumbles in this show. If you don't have subtitles on, he doesn't open his mouth. Everything is like that, so you can't really tell what he's saying if you're not paying attention. It's pretty crazy to me.
It's like the...
It seems intentional. Wow,
it's wild. I didn't realize that... I mean, it makes sense. I didn't know this was his actual like TV debut.
Oh, really? No, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, with all of the kind of prestige TV stuff of the last decade or so, this is his first time. And man, some of the interviews, like the press that was coming out around
that's right. That's what I was going to transition to.
So funny. Like,
I'm not channeling anything superhero. I'm channeling like this art deco painter with the, I don't know.
Yeah.
Man. I love that he's passionate about it. I do. Well, I really do.
He's clearly
a unique cat, man.
And like hearkening back to all these specific performances, like a Humphrey Bogart, like Jimmy Stewart kind of thing.
Did
you see the thing where he talked about working or almost getting cast as the Green Goblin on the Raimi films?
No. Oh boy.
So he talks about how he was on set I guess meeting with Sam Raimi when they were talking about it. And I think separate and apart from that role, he just was offering his advice to Sam Raimi as to like how he should visualize the Spider-Man character and the vibe. And he was like, you know, you should really have a moment where he just starts moving around like a spider. Just kind of like that. That's how he moves. Like even just like in his room, like he's doing a bunch of weird stuff with his legs.
Like this show.
And yeah, he was like, and yeah, Sam didn't take my advice, but you know, like now we got to do that, which is true.
Like the spasms.
That's the stuff where it's like, of course that's where Nick Cage would want to take that. Like,
yeah, right.
Let's make it so over the top and strange.
And that's what I mean. It's not bad. It's not wrong. I'm just watching going like, I think this is kind of cool that he's doing this, but he just owns it so much that you're like, oh yeah, heck yeah. I guess we're doing this, you know?
I mean, to your point, I do think that's what you do. Like if you're going to do multiverse stuff, you know,
That's right.
That's
which we are in everything.
And you know, I do think that that's something that Marvel Studios has not always gotten quite right, is figuring out like whether it's What If or whether it's Multiverse of Madness. I think there are certain moments where they haven't always known how much they want to change, how they want to take advantage of it. Like I think as a net, when you zoom out, I think we're both happy with the general progression of it and where it's led. Right. But I think in the specific, they haven't always utilized, you know, like the famous example being like, is the most interesting thing that you can do, like Peggy Carter being a Captain America instead of Steve Rogers being a Captain America.
Right.
As kind of the breakout multiversal thing. You know, like where it's like, oh yeah, no, I mean that's fun, but this is like, okay, yeah, run with it. Like actually go all out with no strings.
It's kind of weird because in some ways WandaVision is a perfect example of what I want you to do in the multiverse era, but it's funny because that had nothing to do with the multiverse actually in the end. But if you remember while that was happening, they were teasing maybe this is what this is, yeah, or this is some alternate reality or whatever. And it's weird because it actually did it really well. That's like, that's the kind of like leaning into it I want you to do if you're going to do it, even though it ended up not being that. It's going to be a lot of Spider-Man. I've heard a lot of the comments from our listeners. It's going to be a lot of Spider-Man prep, which is awesome. People are wanting, Robbie, a spoiler-free preview. Obviously, our initial reactions. They're going to want a saga so far, a screen recap online, and even maybe a mailbag where we answer questions before we've seen it. All kind of the road to Spider-Man. I think it's going to be that big of a movie, to be totally honest. So,
well, and I do think we're also going to try to do a... on the Comics Corner side, I've been talking to Tanner and Greg, who came on for our roundtable a month or two ago, and I think we're going to do a little bit of Spider-Man comic prep. So
good,
that'll be fun. Yeah, I think that there's...
And if you're just joining Friends from Work Plus, we did a couple episodes, and you've done episodes with Candace on certain comics, Spider-Man comics. That you can go back and find.
That's true.
And by the way, on Patreon, there's a really nice section called Collections where you can just find those, like all the comic ones laid out or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of Spider-Man stuff we're going to be doing. Obviously, you're going on a vacation now. We still got time, but we're prepping for that. Be checking out panelboundcomics.com as well, because you can get a lot of these Spider-Man comics there. And if you use our promo code Friends from Work, you can save even more money. So yeah. We haven't talked about Panelbound Comics in a while, but they're going to have a lot of stuff as you're kind of prepping for Brand New Day, and then especially Doomsday later this year.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie, before I get into X-Men 97, I want to say a couple more things. I'm watching Widow's Bay, which we have to talk about as soon as it's done. I think Widow's Bay is now just below Severance as maybe my second favorite show I've ever seen.
Which I love, because I didn't even know you would be watching it. Or I would have talked to you about it. And then whenever you texted, I think we were both caught up. But because I don't think of you as liking...
I know.
Like horror type stuff. Which I know it's not really a horror show, but...
The humor really helps, because I find it very funny to me.
It is very funny. Agreed. Yeah.
The girl who's playing his sidekick at the mayor office is so funny. I need to know everything about her now to me. Her head nods. I won't spoil anything, but like... Remember when that guy is like in love with his wife and they go, oh, and then he, does the thing with the eyes. And then she goes, like, good. Like, okay, power to you, man. Like, she's so funny. But yeah, I watched that second episode, again, no spoilers. And I had a hard time going to bed that night. It got me enough of like, oh, that's past my threshold of just straight up horror. I mean, just, it's a horror show.
Yeah.
It's just so well done, and the acting is so good, and I'm so intrigued by the overarching story. And I think the reason I keep bringing it up is because Annika's not watching. I have no one in my life watching it with me except for you. So it's like, I need to talk. Like, the episode ends, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I need to talk to someone, and I have no one, and I feel alone. Well, so we need to talk about someone.
No, we do. It's you know what? I feel like we'll get to talk about this then, but just while it's on, before we hit X-Men, I just want to shout out David Fleming, who is the composer for Widow's Bay. I've just been slowly getting more and more acquainted with his stuff. I think he did The Last of Us, which is a little weird of an example because they were pulling from the video
Gustavo
game music.
Or whatever. Yeah, but, Gustavo something did the original video music,
but then Superman, he did that with John Murphy, and it's one of those things where you can kind of see the splits per track. It's like with Elfman and Brian Tyler on Age of Ultron, and basically the split was mostly John Murphy does all the kind of Lex Luthor and Justice Gang stuff, and David Fleming did all of the kind of John Williams Superman stuff.
Okay.
And I really like what he does with that. I feel like it perfectly updates that theme. And I also listen to it a ton because Betty really likes listening to it. And so I have been like tracking. He also did the music for Eternity, that movie with Elizabeth Olsen and Miles Teller.
Yep, which I still haven't seen.
That was great. He's just like becoming someone that I feel like does reliably interesting stuff. And I think that that carries through on Widow's Bay too, which is,
okay.
You know, like he's juggling a lot of tones there, kind of like we talk about the Newton brothers doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, two more things. I also got all of the episodes to Silo season 3, and I have a really fun solo screensaver episode planned for that. I've already recorded it. I don't think I can put it out yet. So I wanted to hold off and watch it with some other people because I have a few people in my life that watch that show. And I couldn't hold off long enough. So I started watching them, and it's like, it's slow and there's some stuff that's not great. But then by episode 5 or 6, it starts really picking up to the point where I watched through 8. And then I was like, okay, my brother and my wife would enjoy this. So I didn't finish it, and I went back. So I've already seen almost all of them now twice before it's out. And I have a really fun podcast episode coming about it. It's so funny. It's a spoiler-free preview, and then I'll do one once I'm done. Okay, so I recorded one through 8 episodes, kind of my overarching thoughts. And it's such a funny episode because I'm going to title it Silo, I'm So Freaking In and It Sucks. Like, the show sucks, and it's so good at the same time. And that's my pitch to you. Like, Robbie, I think you would love the original premise.
Yeah.
People wake up in this silo that's like 144 stories deep into the ground with no elevators, okay? And each story is like 20 feet. So we're talking like 300 stories-ish into the ground.
Uh-huh.
And none of them have any memory of why they're there or why they can't leave. And there's like a cult-like pact that they have to follow to exist in this silo without having issues.
Uh-huh.
But anytime someone gets like the death penalty, it's they get to go outside. If you ever say, I want to go out, you have to be honor that, and they have to be sent outside. And every floor has a cafeteria with a camera that's facing outside to show the people in the silo why they can't go outside. It looks like a post-apocalyptic world.
Right.
And anyone who goes outside comes back and cleans the camera. They ask that you clean the camera. And then they all die. And the question is, why would they ever go clean the camera if they're already been sentenced? Like, if they've like led a rebellion and they've been sentenced to death, why would you do anything to help the silo? But almost all of them come back and clean the camera. And then like 10, 15 seconds later, die from what we assume is poison. So that's kind of the premise. And there's all these mysteries around, why are they there? What's going on? Why would they die on the outside? What are these other weird things? Why is there like a cult like thing? How come they don't remember any of it? So that's like the first episode. And the first episode has, why am I blanking her name? Oh my gosh. Karen from The Office, Karen Filippelli from The Office. Rashida Jones. Wow. It's Rashida Jones and Tim Robbins from Shawshank is the mayor. And, it's real. The premise to me is like 100% my scene. It almost feels like 10 Cloverfield Lane, totally locked into the overarching premise. Now imagine that they cast a bunch of bad actors and it's drawn out so long to get to the point.
Right.
Because it's a book series. They're now taking so much time that it's infuriating. So it's like, we're all watching going, oh my gosh, Common might be the worst actor I've ever seen on screen. And yet we can't, like, I am so excited to watch episode 6 tomorrow. How do you explain that? It's so bad and so good. I can't explain it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like this is different, but Candace and I had a similar experience once we got to a certain stage of watching The Walking Dead, the journey that we went on last year, where it's like, it starts out truly great. Like, the first couple seasons are
elite,
great. And I think anybody that watched them would say, you know, like 2 or 3. And then even up through like 5, it's still hard to not watch. And then there's a point where it's like a lot of the cast is now kind of cycled out and you've got a lot of new folks. And I'm like, I'm still watching this.
Yeah. I don't know any of these people, but I'm
here. Like I'm engaged on some level for some reason. But yeah, it's getting tough.
Yeah, that's funny. I do think you'd like the premise, but you'd roll your eyes at all those things.
Yeah.
Okay, last tangent, and there's probably already an episode out. I haven't recorded yet, but if I get around to recording it, maybe even with Greg, I saw Disclosure Day from Steven Spielberg, and I'm a week, if you're listening to this, you're a week later now, so the movie's been out. I am fascinated to see what the reaction is going to be, because I saw a lot of positive reaction after I tweeted my thing, but I usually have a pretty good sense of this, and I walked out of the theater thinking people are going to give it like a 70 or 75%. I was really disappointed. I felt like it was like a 60%, maybe even lower. Like, I read some of the reviews and I thought to myself, man, I watched a different movie than some of these people. Now, I think there could be a little, and this is my bold prediction, I think there's a little bit of this, we're on this early trend of like, people are getting to see it and they want to have like a good tweet about it.
Yeah,
and it's Steven Spielberg and it's classic. So I think there's going to be a lot of like this initial push. I'm just going to, let's see the legs on this thing. My guess is it doesn't do very well. And like the score is going to go down as we go. And box office wise, I don't think it's going to have like a lot of like rewatchability, like word of mouth spreading. So right, you got to understand where I'm sitting right now. That's controversial to say, but my guess is that it's not going to be as high as some of these early reviews think, and the box office is not going to do as well. Robbie, it's just not what I thought it would be. And I actually thought there were like filmmaking, I don't want to say errors because it's all subjective, but just stuff that like, it was not written very well. I was thinking of you, and I think you would go, oh man, that was not written well. That sounds crazy to say, because it's Steven Spielberg and it's John Williams. This is the most controversial thing I'll ever say. They are absolutely legends. I love what they've done. It just, to me, it felt like two older gentlemen who've like aged out. They've lost their fastball.
I mean, I
that
believe
horrible.
I believe that with Spielberg.
Well, no, John Williams does a really good job with the music. It's just very classic feeling. So, like, do not think you're walking into a rival with the score.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it's interesting because he...
It's like adventurous. It's very like Raiders-ish.
Which, you know, like, yeah, I think there is a mode that every now and then, especially as folks, to your point, get older, I think that the range can sometimes like decrease.
Do you know how old he is, by the way?
Like 93, I think, right?
Yeah, we looked it up last night, 94.
So he came out of retirement, you know, for like, he was retired for, I don't know, all of a year, and came back just to do this movie, which is part of the reason why, you know, and not because I think this movie was so great, but just because it's Spielberg. But yeah, it was crazy getting to see him, because he was 92 when we saw him live, and he was just killing it.
I think on the music front, I take that back, and just that's on me. I think I walked in with a different expectation of what the movie presentation was going to be, like what the kind of movie it is.
Yeah.
And so I think the score was just very unexpected to me as someone who was kind of anticipating a rival-ish kind of movie.
So,
which this is not at all. This is probably closer to Raiders or like The Fugitive or something, you know, like it's a little more like that. And so the music is a little like traditional John Williams. And so that's not fair for me to say it. It's just like, I was expecting something different. That's all. I don't want to get too much into it because I don't want to spoil it for anyone.
I am curious to watch it. I will say from a writing perspective, I'm not super surprised, just because David Koepp, that wrote this. Like, I think that was part of the plug and the hype, is he's joining up with Spielberg again after working with him on, you know, famously Jurassic Park. But I've seen, you know, one, he also worked on like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which was, you know.
Okay.
And
so I think more of that. Think that's more what you're walking into, to be fair.
Well, and I think his more recent stuff, like, again, he's kind of a legend in terms of the blockbusters he's been a part of, like Jurassic Park, the first Spider-Man movie, like depending on how you view the Spielberg War of the Worlds. Like he has done some stuff that I think people view as pretty great and some of the like top earning movies of the modern era. But I do think that the recent things I've seen, like he also wrote Jurassic World Rebirth, which I thought was a poorly written film as well. So
that's such a nice way to say it. I think if you walk into it thinking you're getting Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I think you'll be happy. You'll be very happy. If you go in like me thinking you're getting Arrival, you will be very disappointed. And I was hoping it'd be like movie of the year candidate. Instead, I give it, you know, 60%, 58. So it's like early candidate for disappointment of the year.
Man, and I know, by the way,
I don't mean worst movie of the year. That's very different. I was just the expectation
versus reality. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I've said my piece. Go check out all those episodes. We should have episodes and all that stuff. Silo's coming out soon. All this stuff. So go check that out. Support Friends From Work Plus. It really helps us. Check out Panel Bound Comics and we'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, the kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. But for others, juggling it all can be tough and can feel overwhelming and counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And many worry they're wasting the days of sunshine. Both Robbie and I are looking forward to summer. My wife and I are going back to Michigan to visit our families, play some golf, and enjoy the beach there. Getting that time to recharge with our families really helps us thrive. And so we put an emphasis on self-care during that time, both Annika and I connecting, getting outdoors, spending time with our families, and just discussing what really matters in life. Well, I encourage you guys to build in time for yourselves this summer as well. Therapy can help people better understand their needs, feel more confident setting boundaries, and create a vision of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp is here to help, and they are awesome. BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And they have quality, licensed therapists that are there to help you. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up now and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's right. Check out BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. All right. So Robbie, I just want to say, we haven't talked about X-Men 97 at all. This is all going to be spoiler free. So we're just generically way zoomed out, high level. It freaking rips. I mean, I don't know how to explain this. I got three times the amount of chills that I ever got during Disclosure Day watching this the night after. Wow. I don't know what it is. First of all, the music, the theme itself freaking rips. And those dogs, the Newton brothers, messing with like an electric piano. How dare they, those dogs? And then later, like, I think because it's animated, the music has to be such a feature because there's not as much facial acting and all this stuff.
And it was like such a feature of the original series, which I know you haven't really seen, but yeah.
That's like what's crazy to me. I don't know the original series.
Right.
I think this rips, and here's the thing. It's just even more my genre than the first season. And I like the first season, but we're messing with time travel. Yeah. And things that I recognize, so I'm not going to spoil anything, but there, even for you, there are a couple things coming that I'm like, oh, I know that. I know, dude, I couldn't have been higher, honestly, on the first four. I mean, I better than the first season. And I thought the first season was like 90%+. This rips. I mean, oh my gosh, that's my take. I haven't talked to you at all. So you can hate it. You're allowed to hate it.
No, I agree. So you've watched all four. I've watched only the first two. I had the same reaction. Like the animation looks so great. The music to me was also a standout, and not just because we are
friends with them,
friends with the Newton brothers. But I do think they like this is like I would say. When I watched the screener for Born Again season two, I tracked the music being cool. I don't feel like I tracked it as standout at that point, the same way it is here. Now, again, that's not a diss to season two of Born Again, because I think that that was also an improvement on the first season, which we liked. But this is like some of the moody stuff, like some of the like, I don't know if it's the storm theme, but like whenever that kicked in the first episode, in the second episode, there's some stuff with Cable. None of this is spoilery. It just characters that exist, but yeah.
And then in 3 and 4, they get to some more like big orchestra.
Yeah. Well, and the yeah,
which is there's coming. And choir.
I don't want to say anything else in terms of the theme, but there was a moment that I thought was really fun.
I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about.
The
theme, by the way, which they didn't come up with. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah. Am I crazy?
No, it's wild. I mean, it's like
I get chills watching the credits. That sounds ridiculous. I feel like
there's a reason why people just in the multiverse saga, everyone that gets a chance to do a little take on it loves to throw it in where they can. I think the only thing that I thought watching it was I almost, and now that I've gotten through, and I'm sure where you are, this you know why it wouldn't make sense. There was a part of me that wondered if the first and second episode should have been flipped, only in that like I kind of like,
oh, like the order of it. Interesting.
Yeah, just because like it almost like made me like the I really liked the first episode. I actually liked the second episode more than the first episode. But then I realized, like, I think it's because the second one was a little bit more of the vibe of almost the opposite of what you're saying, like the vibe of the like a continuation of the X-Men series, whereas the first one was a little bit more like off the beaten path. And both were really cool, but yeah, I just wondered, like, because there's something about the kind of the mystery of where are the other X-Men that I think you could have maybe sat in if you had flipped the order of those. But it doesn't really matter.
Well, even for our audience, it kind of matters. It's such a different experience to clock these things as an episode by episode thing like you're doing versus if you kind of just watch all four of them, then I don't even know that I fully registered it was over because I just clicked next.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's probably. So you, I'm not arguing with you. You could be right on that.
But sure. I guess I would say, to your point, I guess I would say to people that get through the first episode and love it, but if they are feeling like
it's different.
Yeah. Like it doesn't, like if there's an element of the original series or season one that they're missing that kind of has that kind of 90s, like the universe of the kind of real world 90s X-Men, you will get more of that.
Yeah.
But man, I know I agree. I thought all the action stuff was so fun. I really like the character redesigns. I like, man, one
there's
thing
a moment where the theme kicks in and I don't want to say why that got me.
Yeah.
I got chills. I was excited.
This makes sense. I won't say anything more from a spoiler perspective, but I thought that Jubilee got such an upgrade.
Okay, yeah. So
this season?
That's the other thing I can't put my finger on. Is it just that I am now more used to the voice acting and the writing for the individual characters that it seems better, or is it better? Because, and again, I'm a little bit recency biased here with episode 3 and 4 because I just turned them off. But every character's interaction and the voices that are coming out of the mouths as I'm watching it just feel more connected and tied in. And I don't know if that's because I'm more prepared or if it is actually better. But Jubilee's a perfect example of she dominates and freaking rips in episode 2. And I don't really remember Jubilee being much of a thing. I mean, I know there was the episode in season 1 where she's kind of fallen in love and then her mom, sets up the thing.
But also,
but this felt like a step up for sure.
That relationship too, what you're talking about, works really well for me here. Like there are some moments where, like, I wouldn't think that I would care about that relationship. And it's, you know, there's like her and Robert or Roberto are supposed to be like a, you know, kind of teen couple.
Yeah.
But there's something about it that like they're doing this sort of like swashbuckling thing together that I like and works and fits the vibe. And yeah, it's just all, it's really fun. And yeah, it like hits the exact right notes for me.
Here's my last thing. And this is spoiling it for you too. This would be a spoiler if I said this, but there's a pretty major, I don't want to say MCU connection because it's not the same universe, but I guess a character that I didn't realize could be in an X-Men thing that's here. I don't know how to say it. That is like some of the visuals around it. I can't say anything, but some of the, like, wow. I'm like, oh, that's freaking dope. It's in a way it's informing and filling in some stuff for the MCU for me, even though I know it sounds weird. It's not the MCU, but like it's informing me more.
Okay. That's exciting.
Yeah. And it's very exciting. And I mean, when you see it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. From my perspective,
there was a moment in the first episode, where it was one of the, you know, they did this in season one, but one of the morph, changes to a non X-Men character that I thought was really fun.
Oh, in this episode.
Did I miss it?
Okay, did I miss it? I gotta go back and see.
There's no, you can't have missed it.
I'm blanking right now. Okay, well, I'll go back and watch that again.
I mean, they're very quick, you know, but yeah, it's...
Also, incredible timing that we read The Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah,
as our last comic episode.
Even just in the episodes I saw, I was thinking that that was maybe a good primer for you.
And wait, there's more. There's more from the book that I read. And honestly, in the trailer, I haven't seen this yet, so it's not through four episodes, but in the trailer, they show the shot of that AI robot thing in the trailer. Almost shot for shot from like the final being at the end of Astonishing X-Men. What's it called?
The danger room?
Yes.
Yeah, danger.
In the shot, there's a shot of her in the trailer, like shot for shot from the comic, the cords coming out of her head.
That's cool. Yeah, I did notice some of the younger mutants that you see start to pop up are definitely pulled from the Morrison run and the Whedon stuff. So I mean, there's one character that it looked design-wise, I didn't see the power set, but looked very similar to one of the characters that features heavily in that Gifted arc. Mm. And so I'm curious about that, but, yeah, I love, that's something else that I really appreciate. And I think I probably would have appreciated this more in the 90s if I had been old enough to have read the comics that they were pulling from and adapting. But now that I do know that, it's just another example of them really deftly navigating these different storylines, and that can get so complicated with X-Men stuff. Mm. But it reminds me of you know what we talked about with Born Again, where they're kind of bringing in different things from different runs that I wouldn't have necessarily thought to put next to each other that work really well, and it kind of makes a new thing, and it makes me really excited to see what it looks like when they inevitably get to the Hickman era of the X-Men, which I think they absolutely will, and how they're going to work on that. And
yeah,
my like secret wish that I don't think will ever come true is that they will bring Jonathan Hickman on. And the thing is that they famously, Hickman had to kind of abort the plan he had for this grand X-Men narrative kind of halfway through, because it was such a success that Marvel Publishing didn't want to end it the way he wanted to end it. They wanted to keep it running because it was just like a sales juggernaut. And so reading between the lines, I think what happened is he was like, okay, well, I get that. I'm going to step out. Like I'm going to wrap this little piece the way that I would like to, but otherwise, like, and he has since said it was one of the most like creatively unfulfilling things he's ever done, which is a bummer because it started out
because he wanted to end it in his way.
Yeah. Like he had a 3-act structure and I think he basically got to act 2. And my hope is that in the course of a season of 97, they at least like consult with him and let him kind of do the tighter 3-act structure there. Cause they were just showing that they can adapt this stuff in such an interesting way. But that's my like wish that may or may not ever materialize.
Before I had ever read comics, I don't think I fully put together what you had just said, which is that Marvel Studios has done a good job from day one of they never just adapt a comic. It's right. Like they're adapting an overarching story, but then they're mashing it up almost always. It feels like to me now having read some of these things, like Spider-Man Blue. You're like, oh, that's kind of where that comes from. But this other thing I recognize from over here.
Yeah.
It's not just like we're recreating. Even like Born Again isn't doing just one thing.
No, I mean, even like Winter Soldier, which I think is the most one-for-one adapted thing I can think of, is still doing a whole different, like the whole kind of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been infiltrated by Hydra all along. That was not part of the Winter Soldier comic that
we read,
that you and I read, you know, like, and that's probably the largest consequence of that movie. Like, obviously, reintroducing Bucky, but they're, and it moves forward the relationship with him and Natasha, which is not a piece of the comic. And so, yeah, they find ways to, it's the other reason why I'm not as worried about you reading some of these comics ahead of like Doomsday and stuff. Cause I think even if you know the, like, I think that's what makes the MCU fun is if you don't know it, then you're surprised. But if you do know it, then it still doesn't mean
you can still be surprised.
and you'll just see like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that they're using that piece that way. Or there's the twist on it, you know, like in season 3 of Daredevil, right, where they're getting right up to the point where Bullseye throws the like billy club baton and kills Karen. But instead there's the swap and it's actually like Father Lantham. And so that actually works better if you have read the comic because it becomes a bait and switch where you think that, or like the same thing in The Dark Knight where they're adapting the famous scene where Harvey Dent's questioning the guy and then he like throws acid on him in the courtroom and that's how he becomes Two-Face. And the first scene you get with Harvey Dent in court in The Dark Knight is him questioning the guy and he reaches into his pocket. And so if you're a comics fan,
you're like, oh, here comes the acid.
Yeah, but then it's like, nope. And then you go through most of the movie without that happening. And then it comes back in like a totally unexpected way. So yeah, I think Marvel has done that particularly well, though. And this is a great example of it.
All right. So overall, I think if you liked season one, I think you're going to like this. I can't think of somebody that is into this kind of stuff. Again, if you're not into an animated cartoon, essentially, that's right, totally fine. But if this was your scene, I don't know why this wouldn't continue to be your scene. It really feels like, I don't know how far along the process they were with Bo DeMeo before they let him go, because he's still an executive producer, but it feels like the same. Like they were a long ways with him is how it feels to me. The writing is still spectacular. So he's a weird dude, but he knows how to write X-Men 97. He's a weird dude that knows how to write X-Men 97. I don't know what to tell you. I think you're going to love it. Yeah. I think you're going to love it. And the music, we're going to have to talk to the Newton Brothers again. Shout out to our friends because they're just crushing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got to go, but the rest of this is going to be, we're probably taking a couple weeks off again on the main feed. Look for some bonus episodes like I talked about earlier on Friends From Work Plus. Robbie, you enjoy your vacation. And then Spider-Man is going to be basically all month July. Like July is going to be all those things I talked about, Spider-Man. So start getting your mind right, getting those questions right, We'll share stuff for you to help guide you through that. And then it'll culminate with a July 31, I think, the very last day viewing of Spider-Man Brand New Day. So lots of fun stuff to come. Thanks for hanging with us. Check out panelboundcomics.com, and we'll see you next time here on Friends from Work.